ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय एतावद्
एव
जिज्ञास्यम्
तत्त्वा
जिज्ञासुनात्मना
अन्वया
व्यतिरेकाभ्यम् यत्स्यत् सर्वत्र
सर्वदा
एतावत् एतावारेव जिज्ञास्यम् तत्त्वजिज्ञासुनात्मना अन्वयव्यतिरेकाभ्यम् यत्स्यत् सर्वत्र सर्वदा एतावारेव जिज्ञास्यम् तत्त्वजिज्ञासुनात्मना अन्वयव्यतिरेकाभ्यम् यत्स्यत् सर्वत्र सर्वदा एतावत्
up to this
eva
certainly
jigyasyam is to be inquired
tatva
the absolute truth
jigyasuna
by the student
atmana
of the self
Anvaya,
directly.
Yatirekabhyam,
indirectly.
Yat,
whatever.
Syat,
it may be.
Sarvatra,
in all space and time.
Sarvada,
in all circumstances.
Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time I am outside of everything. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada therefore comments on the word sarvatra sarvada in the sense that the principles of bhakti yoga, or devotional service to the Lord, are apt in all circumstances. In other words, bhakti yoga is recommended in all the revealed scriptures. It is performed by all authorities. It is important in all places. It is useful in all causes and effects, etc. As far as all the revealed scriptures are concerned, he quotes from the Skanda Purana on the topics of Brahma and Narada as follows. Samsareshmin mahaghore janma mrityu samakule pujanam vasudevasya tarakam vadipi smritam. In the material world, which is full of darkness and dangers, combined with birth and death and full of different anxieties, the only way to get out of the great entanglement is to accept loving transcendental devotional service to Lord Vasudeva. This is accepted by all classes of philosophers. Srila Jiva Goswami also quotes another common passage which is found in three Puranas, namely the Padma Puran, Skanda Puran, and Linga Purana. It runs as follows. Alojya sarva shastrani vicharaya cha punah punah idam ekam shunishpannam deyo narayana sada. By scrutinizingly revealing all the revealed scriptures and judging them again and again, it is now concluded that Lord Narayana is the supreme absolute truth, and thus he alone should be worshipped. Same truth is also indirectly described in the Garuda Purana as follows. Param gatopi vedanam sarva shastrartha vedyapi yona sarveshvare bhaktas tam vidyat purushatmanam. Even though one may have gone to the other side of the Vedas, and even though one is well versed in all the revealed scriptures, if one is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, he must be considered the lowest of mankind. Similarly, it is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, this is very important here. Muda, we know, is generally we think of the Muda as the lowest. Right? The Muda is just a, how do you say, not very intelligent, just donkey, right? Just plodding along, going along with the material energy and very happy with it. So we generally think of him as the lowest. But Naradama is the lowest, and Naradama doesn't mean this gross, disgusting guy that's even more disgusting than this Muda. Here, this is person, even though one may have gone to the other side of the Vedas, he's very intelligent. Right? And having gone through all this, he doesn't come to the conclusion that Vasudeva is everything. He's the lowest. Right? In other words, you can only be the lowest if you got some brains. Right? So that's what somebody say, oh Prabhupada, I'm the lowest. I'm the most fallen. He said, you're not the most anything. Right? Ravana, he's smart. Hiranyaka, these guys got brains. Therefore, they can be the lowest. Right? But the brains are misused, of course. But it's important to note here, this element that you can be intelligent, and if your conclusion's not Vasudev, then you're the lowest of mankind. Because otherwise, we tend to, if someone's intelligent and clever, then one must respect them for their intelligence and cleverness. But it doesn't mean that what they have to say is of any value. Maybe, maybe not. You yourself have to study and come to the conclusion of Vasudeva is everything. Then it works. Similarly, it is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12 indirectly as follows. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchana sarver gunais tattara samasate sura harava bhaktasya kruto mahadguna manoratena sati dhavato dahi. One who has unflinching devotion under the Supreme Personality of Godhead must have all the good qualities of the demigods, and contrarily, one who is not a devotee of the Lord must be hovering in the darkness of mental speculation, and thus must be engaged in material impermanence. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.18 says, Shabda Brahmani Nishnato Na Nishnat Na nishnayat pare yadi shramastasya shrama phalo hyadenum iva rakshata. One may be well versed in all the transcendental literature of the Vedas, but if he fails to be acquainted with the Supreme, then it must be concluded that all his education is like the burden of a beast, or like one keeping a cow without milking capacity. Similarly, the liberty of discharging loving transcendental service to the Lord is invested to everyone, even the women, the shudras, the forest tribes, or any other living beings born in sinful conditions. Te vai vidantyati tiranti cha deva mayam stri shudra huna shavara api papa jiva yad yabhuta krama para parayana shila shikshas Kiryat jana api kumu shuta dharanaye. Bhagavatam 2.7.46. The lowest of human beings can be elevated to the highest stage of devotional life, even if they are trained by the bona fide, if they are trained by the bona fide spiritual master, well versed in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. If the lowest can be so elevated, then what to speak of the highest, who are well versed in the Vedic knowledge? The conclusion is that devotional service to the Lord is open for all, regardless of who they are. That is the confirmation of its application for all kinds of performance of the service. Therefore, the devotional service to the Lord with perfect knowledge, through the training of a bona fide spiritual master, is advised for everyone, even if one happens not to be a human being. This is confirmed in the Garuda Purana as follows. Kita pakshi mriganam cha harau sanyasta chetasam urdvam eva gatim manye kimbunar jnaninam nirinam. Even the worms, birds, and beasts are assured of elevation to the highest perfectional life if they are completely surrendered to the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So what to speak of the philosophers amongst the human beings? Therefore, there is no need to seek properly qualified candidates for discharging devotional service to the Lord. Let them be either well-behaved or ill-trained. Let them be either learned or fools. Let them be either grossly attached or in the renounced order of life. Let them be liberated souls or desirous of salvation. Let them be inexpert in the discharge of devotional service or expert in the same. All of them can be elevated to the supreme position by discharging devotional service under the proper guidance. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9:30-32 as follows. Apichet suraracharo bhajate mam ananyavak sadhur eva samantavya samyag vyavasito hisya mam hi partha vya pasritya ye pi su papayonaya striyo vaishyas tata shudras te pi yanti paramgatam. Even if a person is fully addicted to all sorts of sinful acts, if he happens to be engaged in the loving transcendental service of the Lord, under proper guidance, he is to be considered the most perfect holy man, without a doubt. Thus, any person whatsoever and whosoever he or she may be, even the fallen woman, the less intelligent laborer, the dull mercantile man, or even a man lower than all these, can attain the highest perfection of life by going back home, back to Godhead, provided he or she takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in all earnestness. This sincere earnestness is the only qualification that can lead one to the highest perfectional stage of life. And unless and until such real earnestness is aroused, there is a difference between cleanliness or uncleanliness, learning or non-learning in the material estimation. Fire is always fire, and thus, if someone touches the fire, knowingly or unknowingly, the fire will act in its own way without discrimination. The principle is Harir Harati Papani Dushta Chiter Apis Mita. So here Krishna is now, this is the fourth of the Chaturshloki. Now this is teaching us how to apply the others. Means that Krishna is saying that he's everything. He was there before the creation, he's there during the creation, he's there after the creation. He has entered everything simultaneously and at the same time hasn't. So this search for seeing the Lord everywhere, directly and indirectly, this is the path that the devotee accepts. Right? This is the path that will get us somewhere. So Prabhupada is pointing out here from Srila Jiva Goswami that in applying this, then bhakti yoga applies everywhere. We should not think that it applies when we're in the temple room and when we have our dhotis and saris on or when we're eating prasad or like that or chanting our japa, and other times it doesn't. Trying to point out that bhakti, since Krishna has already pointed out, he is in everything, he is everything, therefore dealing with everything must have that element of bhakti to it. And that understanding that it is Krishna. Thinking otherwise is foolishness. Right? To think that there is something outside of devotional service of Krishna is foolishness. Right? We can be real about We're supposed to be real about that our life is Krishna conscious, that it is practical, it's working, that our relationships are going fine. But to say that there's some reality outside of devotional service, and the devotional service doesn't touch everything that there is in existence, that's foolishness. Extreme foolishness. And it will get no one any benefit. It's actually atheistic. Right? So that's the great thing about devotional service. One may be acting like an atheist, but it doesn't make you one. Right? Just like Prabhupada tells us, you know, they weren't clean, or they weren't behaving, or they were lamenting. He says, you're acting like a Shudra. He didn't say you are a Shudra. So in dealing with devotees, we don't say you are an atheist, but it is an atheistic mentality. Yudhishthira even said this to Draupadi. She was also making this point. You performed all good activities, all nice things, and you're in the forest. And Duryodhana, who basically hasn't done a good thing in his life, is sitting as the emperor of the world. So therefore, this religion doesn't seem to work. So Yudhishthira said, this is atheistic. Right? So we can take that platform. So we're making this bold statement that if we say there's something outside devotional service, a reality beyond, that's atheism. Because whatever one may, this does not mean one cannot glean things from anywhere. But unless you're seeing Krishna in it and understanding that's the working principle, it's atheism. It's business. It's the mercantile mentality. How to gain something without dharma. Right? Business people give money in charity if they're smart because they know they will get the money back. Right? I've heard this. I mean, it's natural and it should be like this. Because otherwise they would keep all the money and no one else would have any. But money is made, and if it's given away, you get back. So they can do this. So even religion will be seen from the angle of artha, gain. So if that's our gain, our pragmatic, minimalistic approach to culture and philosophy, that's fine, but know it to be the mentality of the mercantile class. And we see here where Prabhupada doesn't put them on the top. The Vedic culture, at least they get the second rung from the bottom. In the Japanese culture, they are on the bottom. Even Shudras are considered better than them because they're just so cheating and, you know, conniving. So, but in the proper state, then whatever the mentality, it's connected to Krishna, so it becomes perfect. Therefore, it doesn't matter what position one's from, it works. One is uplifted. One goes back to Godhead from whatever position it is. Therefore, we're not worried what somebody's background, where they're from, anything like this. Because the devotional process is so powerful, it will work. And to not have faith in that is faithlessness. And to think that something else other than devotional service will work, that's atheism. So, Krishna's making it clear. All circumstances, all space and time, both directly and indirectly. So that kind of covers everything. It doesn't really leave much space, right? You know, we thought Duryodhana was being stubborn when he said no more land would fit on the head of a pin. You know, at least on the head of a pin, you know, there's space for, you know, angels to dance on or something. But here, Krishna's not even leaving that space, right? It's just, there is nothing, that means he is space, he is time, he is everything. So this principle is very, very important because we may take it lightly, oh yeah, I heard that, but why do you do the things that you do? Who is the authority under which you're doing it? And if you check, you'll find much of that may not be devotional. And we haven't even taken the time to try to connect it devotionally because we're being practical, we're being real, Prabhu. But Krishna here, He's being real, and he's telling that if you don't do this, it's not really progressive. Right? Now we're making these points strong. One can say, no, no, but let's flip it to the other side. Right? Spin doctrine is very popular these days. So we'll spin it. No, no, but you know, anything is just, yeah, okay, but are we talking about others here, or are we talking about ourselves? Right? We're making these statements for you to think about this yourself in your own private time. No one else knows what is your degree of devotion, what is your degree of non-devotion. It's for you to think about. Right? And this thing of, well, somebody else, and they do it, that's what's given a little bit after. Doesn't matter what background they're from, where they're from, if they're engaged in devotional service, even if they're sinful, it doesn't matter. Because devotional service is more powerful than anything. Like that. It doesn't jive well with our natural kind of life if we are going to be religious. It doesn't really jive with that. Our puritanical kind of approach, our New Testament approach to religion and philosophy. Because, yeah, it doesn't really jive with that. Because, why doesn't it jive? Because those scriptures are teaching you how to go to heaven. And you go to heaven by pious activities, not by bhakti. Right? Bhakti takes you to the spiritual world, pious activities take you here in the material. Nicer place, but material. That requires good and bad, right and wrong. You're not good, you're not right, you don't go. Right? But here, it's right means, is it devotional? Right? Does that make some sense? Now, this takes some fine intelligence to understand this point. It means if you're smart, you'll understand this. If you're not smart, you won't understand this. Right? Just to avoid any spin doctrine here. This does not mean one can be immoral. What it means is your morality only has value as long as it's connected to Krishna. So that doesn't mean if I don't have to be moral to be Krishna conscious, I won't be moral. No, that's for nonsenses. That's the sinful people. That's their mentality. So we're talking about smart people who can tell the difference between things. Right? So in other words, we have to take the responsibility that you're going to go back to Godhead when you're ready to go back to Godhead. Right? It's not going to be you're going to walk out of the temple and then a lightning bolt's going to flash out of the blue sky and hit you and then suddenly there it is, Eureka, you're Krishna conscious. Right? It doesn't work like that. When you decide, yes, I'm going to be Krishna conscious, that's when it becomes dynamic. So if it's not happening in your life, there's absolutely no one to blame other than yourself. And if you try to blame anyone else, you're cheating. That's simple. You're cheating because nothing else actually has a meaning compared to devotional service. Devotional service is so powerful. It has nothing to do with anything else that happened in your life. Right? Your mother ate too many pretzels once when you were in the womb. Or, you know, you grew up without one parent or another. Or your situation was this, so you don't understand Prabhu. None of that. The soul is the eternal servant of God. At any time, any place, anywhere, they can be God conscious. And if you're not, and you're blaming on someone else, then you're only blaming others for the qualities you have that are wrong in yourself. But we don't want to accept that, so we have to say it's the other person's fault. This is a super popular position, right? Very popular these days. I'm never wrong, someone else is always wrong, you know? That's why when we hear these stories and themes that are old, you know, they're nice, they're romantic, They're chivalrous, they have dignity, but not real. Because man nowadays isn't on that quality. You know, he won't take responsibility for his actions. So if something's wrong, it has to be someone else's fault, because I'm always right. Right? So that's why all these old romantic things aren't practical nowadays. Because nowadays we're not dealing with human beings. human being takes responsibilities. Others don't. Right? So this is the point. Is you just if you want to go back to Godhead, it's your call. It's not someone else's call. The president said this, this one did this, or the other brahmacharis, the other brahmacharis, this family, that family. It's nothing to do with any of them. You want to go back to Godhead? Then it's in your hand to do it. You just have to take it and do it. And Krishna here in these four verses is giving you the essence, and then the whole Bhagavatam will explain this more. Is that at all time, all circumstances, try to remember and be absorbed in Krishna. That's what you must do. Then everything becomes nice. Otherwise, if you don't go back to Godhead, it's no one's fault but yourself. Right? It sounds very good. Oh, this one said this, that, I can't stand devotees, therefore it's all right for me to be outside the temple and not follow any devotional activities. Right? I mean, I remember before there were grihasthas that lived outside the temple simply because they couldn't live in the temple, and they followed all their activities, and they made money, and they were rich. Right? So, you know what I'm saying? It's not someone else's fault. That's what we're trying to say. It may have influence, yes, because we are so attached to our conditioned nature. What is around us will affect our conditioned nature. And because we identify with it, then yes, we will sometimes be more enthusiastic, sometimes less. But we must understand that still, we don't have to be affected. We are affected because we're used to being affected. But we can also train ourselves to be less affected and eventually not affected. So like that, then Krishna's very clear. But you see, he's very kind in this. We're making this statement so strongly simply to create awareness. It's not a matter of criticism, it's a matter of awareness. Right? That we're aware that, yes, I have to take that responsibility and become Krishna conscious. At the same time, Jiva Goswami is pointing out that it doesn't matter where you're starting from, it'll work. So that means even if we take account of our position and it's not good, it doesn't matter. Because wherever you start from, devotional service is so powerful, it doesn't matter. Right? If you're starting here in an illusion or there in an illusion, you know what I'm saying? You have a mirage. Oh, it's here in the mirage or there in the mirage. Does it matter? Because it's just a mirage. It's just a different aspect of the mirage. Does that make sense? So everything is very kind. It's very strong, but at the same time, it's very kind. Thunderbolt and rose. That's human culture. If it's only thunderbolt or it's only rose, they're both wrong. The person's living that way and the person's under them, there's a good chance they'll all go to hell. Right? The right wing conservatives. And the left-wing conservatives. They both don't know what they're doing. Right? Because they only see that one aspect. Oh, you have to be nice to everybody, everything. No, there are standards. Someone's wrong, they're wrong. At the same time, it's not everybody's just wrong. They're wrong, but it doesn't mean from that position that you can't make it positive. Does that make sense? So there's a balance. So the general tendency is we're tough with ourselves, liberal with others. Of course, in the modern polity, you're very liberal with oneself and tough with others. Right? Like that. You're fine. You're self-proclaimed moralists. They're always like that. Guaranteed. Like that. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
I don't see how the example
oh, how they are, I think it's because, could you hear? He was saying, how is the examples probably gives for indirect is to Maharaj, they sound quite obvious, clear. I think it's indirect probably because grammatically they're using in inverse. You're starting with, instead of going, unless you know Krishna, then you're nowhere. You're starting out, even if you know everything else, then they bring it around back. I think that's why, because direct would just be, it directly does, the other one it gets there anyway, because indirect still touches Krishna, so it's just a matter of, you know, it's probably just a more poetic, because you always like the verse, if you're attached to, you know, your society, friendship and love, then don't go down to the river Jamuna and see this nice boy Krishna playing on the flute. That would be like an indirect way of saying Krishna is the most attractive person, and one who becomes attractive won't like material energy. Does that sound okay? Yes? No? Anything else? Is that okay? Anything? Yeah? Okay. Anything else? No. Yes.
I believe it talks for those kids there against nobody. You know, why do the old kids you know, sit behind the young kids so the young kids don't make nonsense behind the back of the old kids?
What, say again? Why do the young kids sit in front of the old kids?
No, why cannot the old kids sit in the back of the young kids so the young kids don't make any nonsense in the back of the old kids?
But then you have the problem with the old kids making nonsense in back of the young kids. But that's probably better because you don't want the young ones to learn too quick. So it is probably the better of the two options. Who is in charge for those kids? I really am not sure. Which kids would they be? What? I mean, they may just be community kids. So, I mean, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Because it means you have so many kids here. Some are in the school, some are at the home. I wouldn't know what if they're connected to a particular school or if they're not. Like that. Yeah. You could ask around, maybe someone would know. Yes, sir.
What was the Madhya Madhikari? You see Krishna everywhere, or he differentiates?
Does the Madhya Madhikari see Krishna everywhere? That's the principle of Madhyama that generally would technically be called the Jnana Yogis, in that they are analyzing and seeing through Shastra. It means Shastra Chakshus they are seeing. This is a very important point, because Krishna is unlimited and Ananta Sesha is still, since time immemorial, has been talking with his unlimited mouths unlimitedly. And still the glory goes on. That the chit potency isn't alive, is the internal potency is alive. In it, it carries the complete Godhead. Now, someone according to their potency may carry more or less volume of this potency. Right? But the potency is the same. Does that make some sense? Then, their ability to understand it, how much of it they themselves can directly explain to you through their instruction or their example, that will vary. But that in no way affects the potency itself if it's received from the bona fide source. Does that make sense? So, therefore, one gets benefit. It works. The process functions. Otherwise, how is it functioning with all these persons that it's talking about, the lowest of human beings? Because the potency is there. It's been heard from bona fide source. So they've heard it from a bona fide source, but you don't understand fully what's there. Krishna says if you know what has been said, I mean, you understand why you're doing something, you get more benefit than if you don't. Right? That's why bhakti gets more result than the jnana sukriti. Because Agyata Sukriti means you don't know it's devotional service. You're just doing it because, you know, for whatever. You like the devotees, or it's interesting, or it's nice, or you're hungry and you like food. Right? But bhakti means you know it's Krishna, and so you're eating it, or you know it's Krishna's service, so you're doing it. So you get more result. So we see is that there's all these things there. One can say, well, I can only hear from the Uttamadikari. Great, but what benefit, how much benefit will you get? Because your understanding of it will be very small. So you're putting all the emphasis on the other person, but what about yourself? What's your qualification? Right? Understand? Like, I, you know, over the last, you know, however it is, 20 years or so, more, that we hear talks about, you know, the guru discussion. I only hear discussions about gurus. I've never once heard a discussion about a disciple. What's the qualification of a disciple? I haven't heard it. Right? So, that's the point, is that we make this into a very, an issue when it's not. The point is if it's coming from bona fide source, it works. And the intelligent person finds like-minded people that are as advanced as possible to associate with. That's what works. Right? That's what the Shastras recommend. And to make a distinction, they do point out the difference between the Uttamadhyam and neophytes. But the point is like-minded and as advanced as possible. So if all you can find is a neophyte, that's going to help. Does that make sense? So, therefore, seeing through the eyes of Shastra is seeing God. Because he does appear in knowledge. He is tattva. Right? But it's not the highest form. Rasa is higher form. Because Krishna is, he is God, but to him that's not important. What's important is his relationship with his devotees. So if by lack of knowledge you're not reciprocating right with the Lord, you need to have knowledge. But the knowledge itself is not the end that Krishna seeks. It's the devotion that arises from, triggered by having that knowledge. Does that make sense? But because the knowledge is Krishna, it is potent. Therefore, the madhyam is considered advanced. But that's it. He sees through the eyes of Shastra. And then, accordingly, gradually, then that seeing becomes real. That's what ruchi is. It means it's real. Right? It's not just committed. You're committed to the understanding. You know, in nishtha, it means you actually have a taste for it, or you're attached to it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the introduction, it appeared to me that the difference between madhyam and anudham was the anudham was able to convince people that good knowledge of Shastra is able to convince people. Is it just knowledge, or is it a question of realization?
Okay, so the question is, the nectar devotion explains the difference between the prepositions based on the ability to convince, never be defeated, and have an argument, or not be defeated and not have an argument, or not have an argument possibly defeated. That's one. There's many, many. So depending upon what it is, the point they're making, they'll bring out that aspect. So that's one, is that, in other words, it's not as much, the madhyam will have knowledge, but because the knowledge has, you study certain areas, you contemplate certain areas according to your situation that you're in. When you contact other people, they may have different sphere of experience. So they'll bring up a question or make a point, give an example that you didn't think about. So therefore the madhyama might be stumped. Not in the principle, He's fixed in that, but in exactly what example to give, or just how to retort for what they said, because he's thought about it deeply, but it's not necessarily that broad. But the Uttama, because of the depth of the realization, because he just sees the principle, then it's alive everywhere. So there's no detail that it doesn't match. Therefore, no one can defeat them, because there's nothing that they can't make a point about, because they see Krishna in everything. So whatever anybody brings up, he can see Krishna in it, and therefore he can speak. While the other person is limited by their realization of technical knowledge. And then the neophyte is weakest because they don't have that much knowledge, and that faith, the commitment, may not be deep enough to allow them to see Krishna, even in, you know, opposing arguments. Does that make sense?
So you're saying that it's a realization of technical knowledge?
No, it's realization of the, you know, philosophy and culture of Krishna consciousness. It's faith. What we're meaning is how I say it. You have someone with knowledge. You have someone who's expert and someone who's master. These are like the three levels, the Vedic, how they'll categorize knowledge. So in this way, you could say, in this example, that the neophyte would be like someone with knowledge. The mudging is someone who's expert, and the master would be the Uttama. Difference between the master and the expert, maybe this body of knowledge may be the same, but the master is able to apply it more broadly. Therefore, and he can always bring it back. He does not necessarily get caught up in the technique. So the master can explain even the most technical thing very simply to a neophyte. Right? He may explain it simply to the expert. It's hard to do. They've learned so much, they know so much, and they think of these things, but they're not able to make it so that it's necessarily able to get. It means other experts, very intelligent people, yes. Or someone with the same experience, yes. No problem. Because then you can use your vocabulary, you can use, like you see, Prabhupada had no problem in switching back and forth between English and Sanskrit. He was not attached, it always had to be Sanskrit to sound academic and, you know, feel good that it's spiritual. He could use very, very simple language comfortably. Or he could use very technical language comfortably. So depending upon the audience and that, then he would speak. So this is mastery. Like that. So it's not so much that it's more, it's a matter of the depth of realization. So the neophyte means they have neither. Well, expert generally means they have all the technique, but they don't necessarily have the realization of the technique. Like that. Is that okay?
Perhaps it also matter that one is using it working from the background of intelligence, one is working
from the background of the soul. Yeah, you could also say, yeah, intelligence. But there would be some, because there must be. Yeah, but basically you could say the difference would be that the emphasis would be more on technical understanding, and the other would be more on realization. So it's a difference between jnana and vijnana. But there must be some vijnana there to be able to see through the eyes of Scripture. But it just hasn't come to the point where, in other words, you're dealing more with the Lord and His energies. Like that. But if you continue like that, then the form will become manifest. Because it starts with energy. So basically the difference between anishta and nishta bhakti is that faith. It's technically the same thing. They're both dealing with the energy. But once the energy has, once if one continues and that faith is fixed, that energy will turn into form. And form into qualities into pastime. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's, you still have to, Okay. So it's 9 o'clock. We'll stop here, and then if there's anyone wants to continue with questions, we'll continue after. Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jaya Jaya Gaur.